Man, I love that song. It just puts me in such a good mood every time I hear it. I'm Lee Zishi, and you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. Today, we'll be covering the headlines from a socialist analyst, and then we'll be talking about the important electoral landscape in New York City in 2019. In the studio, we have Renee Parody, co-chair of the DSA National Electoral Committee, and all before we open it up for calls from all of our listeners like you. So since we were on the air last week, worker power has had a strong showing across the country. LA public school teachers ended their week-long strike, reaching a deal that includes a 6% pay raise, limits on class size, a full-time nurse for every school, and a librarian for every middle and high school. And here in New York, air traffic workers and flight attendants helped end the federal government shutdown. On Friday, flights began to be delayed at LaGuardia Airport because unpaid air traffic controllers were not coming into work, and they, along with flight attendants, threatened to go on strike. Within hours, the federal government had announced that the government would reopen. And the U.S. government, with the U.S. government showing increasing intention to interfere in Venezuela to secure oil interests and thwart a socialist government, National DSA released a statement categorically opposing any and all efforts by the U.S. government to interfere in the domestic politics of Venezuela. The U.S. has a long and bloody track record of actions to overthrow democratically elected governments, stop the spread of socialism, and maintain U.S. imperial dominance in the region. With the IDC gone, New York State has started off the legislative session by passing a flurry of bills, including the New York Dream Act, which offers undocumented students access to state financial aid and scholarships for higher education. They also passed the Reproductive Health Act, which updates New York State's abortion laws to protect and expand women's reproductive rights. Additionally, the state legislator passed New York City DSA member and state senator Julia Salazar's first bill, the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act. And today on the show, we'll be talking about the incredible electoral work that New York City DSA has done, which led to the election of Senator Salazar. And just to kind of break down for folks how we run this show, we have a couple people who are in the studio all the time, but we're actually made up of an amazing team of comrades who are not only going out there and getting sound and reporting from the important grassroots organizing that DSA is doing, but we have kind of co-producers who lead the way on those shows. And so for today's show on electoral work, we have Johnny Sagan in the studio.
Thank you, Lee. I'm Johnny Sagan, a.k.a. Snowy Wilderness, an artist and journalist living here in Central Brooklyn, a member of the Central Brooklyn branch of the NYC DSA. I live in Flatbush, and when I became involved in helping to create this radio show, I wanted to try to put together an episode about electoral issues that DSA was working on, and in the process of going out and attending Brooklyn electoral DSA meetings, I met the amazing guest we have with us today. I'm so glad you're willing to be here. Please welcome Renee Parody to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Thanks for the great interview, the great introduction. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk about all the great work that the electoral working groups within New York City DSA and nationally within DSA are doing.
Excellent. Could you give us a small bio of the various roles you've played in electoral issues for DSA?
Sure. I came to DSA in the Trump bump. I'm a lawyer. I've worked for candidates in the past, including Obama's first election and Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primary doing voter protection. And so when I joined DSA, I got involved with the Brooklyn Electoral Working Group, and I helped set up our political action committee so we can do city electoral work. And I've been a member of the organizing committee of the Brooklyn Electoral Working Group since that organizing committee formed last year. And then I was appointed and then elected to the National Electoral Committee, which is a national committee of folks who try to provide skills training, facilitate collaboration, basically provide for all DSA locals the kind of support that's necessary to run the electoral campaigns that make sense where they live. So I was one of the primary drafters of DSA's national electoral strategy and have been working both in Brooklyn, in New York City, and nationwide to see the kind of grassroots campaigns that DSA Electoral has done here in New York succeed.
Excellent. And for listeners who may not be familiar with what DSA is, I'd be interested to hear your description of the Democratic Socialists of America.
DSA is a big tent organization of people who believe that the capitalist system that we all live under needs to be ended, and that we need democratic control of our lives, of every aspect of our lives, primarily where we work, where we live, and how we live. And so, you know, that's, I think, for a lot of people, the coincidence of both seeing ideas like Bernie Sanders win such a broad platform and welcome reception by the American people in 2016, combined with the human tragedy of seeing Trump get elected, made a lot of us feel like not only was it possible to organize for a better world, but imperative to do so.
Excellent. Let's just pause really quickly to let people know how they can get in touch with DSA or find DSA online if they would like to get involved.
So the NYC DSA website is socialists.nyc, and the national DSA website is dsausa.org. And on both those websites, you can sign up for the newsletters, and you can also join the national organization. One of the great things about DSA is if you pay your dues and become a dues-paying member, you get a voice in how the organization is governed. You can vote in local and national elections to determine who leads the organization. You can come to meetings and talk about what you'd like to see. DSA is only as strong and as well-governed as its members participate in and make it so. We definitely, I think, do model the democratic governance in DSA that we'd like to see in all aspects of our lives.
Excellent. And before we go into a quick station break, thanks for being on the show. We have a great show prepared for you all today about electoral issues for 2019. And just very quickly, what would you say is the buzzword, the byword for electoral in 2019 for us?
I'd say it's preparation.
Excellent. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on all podcast platforms at Revolutions Per Minute. If we're not on your favorite platform, let us know. Today we're talking about electoral goings-on in New York City and beyond for 2019 with Renee Paradis. There's more going on than you might expect. Can't stop, won't stop. So we're going to get into our electoral power episode of Revolutions Per Minute now and begin by getting a sense of how NYC DSA has been building power in New York City by speaking with Aaron Taub from the Queens Electoral Working Group.
Like a year ago, when we were considering the Ocasio endorsement, DSA like didn't have like name recognition and footprint among the New York City political class. Whereas now, because DSA is like kind of a known commodity in New York City politics. You know, now there's like 13 candidates coming to DSA for the endorsement. And we're building real infrastructure and like lasting infrastructure and institutional knowledge that gets passed down from one organizing committee to the next organizing committee. And our canvassers are coming off, you know, between Ocasio and Salazar. I mean, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, I'm totally comfortable canvassing. I'm good at canvassing. I'm comfortable making the ask. Yeah, we're building for the long haul. And I think that breeds accountability. I mean, if you look at sort of the effort that went into Julia Salazar's campaign that DSA put in, it's staggering. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can check me on this, but I think they knocked like over 100. DSA knocked over 100,000 doors in that race, if I'm not mistaken. I would want to have a good relationship with those people. I think really the main thing is just like When we think about accountability, it's about doing the work, right? There are no shortcuts to power. It's not like, you know, we elect someone, they are just going to listen to us because we help them win, right? Because we think about like how much power the capitalists have and even how much power other sort of elements of sort of your institutional progressive, you know, your de Blasio left, right, have, you know, really what's going to make people listen to DSA is if we have like a large working class base that can turn people out on election day and can turn people out to marches. And in the case of the Julia Salazar campaign, where we like recruit the candidate and run them, it's fine, right? You can just do that. And we can do that at our own pace, right? We have a very complex, very democratic endorsement process, which I'm extremely proud of. Like, I love that this is like a member-led organization. And I love like when you build the real consensus, the people come out, right? And I don't think people would come out if it was just five people got in a room and were like, well, we're endorsing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's great. You'll love her. Trust us. You know, and also like, I don't want to brag, but like, we're really good at field. Like, if you were in the Julia Salazar office on election day, it was just poetry in motion. It was so well run. It was just hundreds of people coming together, and like, everyone was where they were supposed to be, and it was extraordinary. And like, I don't know, if you want Bernie Sanders to win this election, you want DSA to be having like playing a hand in that field operation, I think, you know.
Wow. That was great. That was interesting. Renee, what do you think? Let's kick this off.
So that was an interview with Aaron Taub, who's a great organizer in Queens and was sort of the person most singularly responsible for DSA endorsing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the work that we did to get her elected. And, you know, for me, the most important thing that Aaron talked about in terms of our overarching DSA electoral strategy that we've tried to practice here in Brooklyn is, you know, for a lot of us, we've done canvassing for candidates before, we've done work for candidates before, and it's, you know, it's a lot like the circus coming to town. There's a huge flurry of activity. You know, you come into a campaign office, you're given a walk sheet to go walk. You know, it's really exciting. And then the victory party happens and it all goes away. The tents come down, everyone leaves, and the candidate leaves with the data and the infrastructure, and the campaign staff leave with the expertise to do this again next time. And the people who work to see something done in their community have the sense of mission accomplished. And so what we in DSA try and build through our electoral work is sustained, sustainable campaign infrastructure that will not only help us elect multiple candidates, but will help us govern our own work to elect those candidates. So you're not, you know, one of our leading lights, the co-chair of the Brooklyn Electoral Working Group, Tasha Vanna Aiken, hates the way that campaign staff uses the phrase vols, to just refer to vols, super vols, as though the people doing the work are, and whose community it is, are manifestly distinct from campaign staff. And there, you know, again, it's this idea that DSA is not just about enacting particular policies, but also about modeling the way that we'd like to see all of our lives governed, which is by all of us together collectively. And so what we've tried to do is to build the kind of campaign infrastructure that elects candidates in a sustainable way, where we have the data, we have the tools, we have the expertise year in, year out, and can use that to elect other candidates. We can use it to do other kinds of work where it's not just about a single candidate, but it's about building a sustainable movement.
So when we talk about the electoral strategy of DSA nationally and of DSA in New York City, how would you describe that strategy, given what we've discussed about the basic values of people centricity and organizing with a sense of respect for volunteers?
So I think the essence of it is just that DSA controls its own fate and controls its own work. And so you know, our members are the ones who are deciding the work we will do through their democratically elected representatives and through, you know, voting at meetings, that they feel they have a lot of control over the work that we're all doing, a lot of control over who gets endorsed and what work we do for them. Nationally, I think it's slightly different because, you know, we in New York recognize, like, we're really lucky to have a huge membership, many of whom are activated, to have a one-party city rule in the city where winning the Democratic primary can mean just coasting to victory. Literally, Julia Salazar didn't face an opponent in the general election. There's no one else on the ballot. So it's, in some sense, we've created a strategy around who we recruit, where we run, that's really dependent on our local situation. And so with the national electoral strategy, it's really important to all of us who worked on it to make sure that we accounted for local variances and local conditions and said the important thing is that each chapter of DSA, whether they're in smaller rural areas where, you know, you're dealing with red state politics or places like Seattle or Minneapolis, where there is ranked choice voting, that there's not a one size fits all rule, but instead a rule that each local gets to sort of control its own destiny again, where the people who are doing the work get to decide what makes the most sense for them in terms of electoral work. So rather than having a top down strategy about here is the checklist of the kind of electoral work each chapter should be doing, it's instead about what can National do to help locals do the work they want to do. What kind of skills can we teach and transfer from either people who come into DSA with those skills already in place or people who learn those skills through the work they're doing, right? So if a chapter is starting to do electoral work, what can we do to connect them to people who've already run a field program, who've already done communications, who've already had to deal with, you know, how do you deal with red baiting or, you know, all the kinds of things that our candidates face in particular. And so that's really been our focus on the National Electoral Committee is providing locals skills and resources in terms of those kinds of collaborations.
And I think that many people are curious about the possibility of more socialist candidates emerging in New York City for other offices. And at the same time, there are many people who, it might be fair to say, are more focused on specific issues that they would like to see addressed legislatively. So in that interplay between candidates and issues, how would you say DSA can strategize to minister to the needs and concerns of its members and of the working class that is our constituency?
So I think, you know, within electoral, I would say most people are fairly cognizant of the fact that it would take it'll take a long time to slowly replace the entire elected leadership of New York City and state with socialists. And so the question is, how do you elect people in a way that builds a movement? And that's, I think, where a large part of the sort of keeping the data and infrastructure strategy that we talked about comes into play. And I think, you know, we're about to hear after the station break some audio from a Canvas project that Electoral is working on right now with our housing working group, where the rent laws in New York, the rent stabilization laws, are expiring this year and have to be renewed by the new legislature. So the question is, how can we use the tools that we've developed in electoral, like canvassing and field, to place pressure on electeds to enact those issues that either they ran on or that we might run someone against them in the future. I mean, you know, of all the jokes about politicians, I think the truest one, right, is that, or not joke, but saying is that, you know, they're mostly concerned with keeping their jobs. And so if DSA comes in and says, look, we have X number of members in your district, if you don't vote our way on this, you're going to get primaried, is, I think, a very powerful thing to a lot of people who are in power, because it's a true threat to that power. And so I think we're always really conscious about how to use issues in our electoral work, right? I mean, Julia ran on universal rent control, right? That was a huge part of our campaign. And in fact, one of the things we used on the doors was she doesn't take any money from real estate, any money from PACs. It was a big thing that Alexandria ran on as well. Just again, connecting our electoral work back to the other issues that DSA is working on.
Thank you so much, Renee Paradis from DSA NYC. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on all podcast platforms at Revolutions Per Minute. If we're not on your favorite platform, let us know. Today we're talking about electoral goings-on in New York City and beyond for 2019. There's more going on than you might expect. Can't stop, won't stop. And later on, we're going to be having questions for the audience to call in on our request line and our questioning line. Here are the two questions. Canvassers out there, tell us your experience working on political campaigns, and what would you like to see NYC DSA electoral work on next? And for our next recorded segment, in reporting on electoral goings on in NYC DSA for 2019, as Renee started pointing out, of all the electoral work we do, perhaps the most important is our field canvassing. This past Thursday, I caught up with the field committee of the BK Electoral Working Group as they debriefed and forward planned for the Universal Rent Control campaign, their current priority. Here are Jasmine and Sam from the field committee talking about universal rent control.
My name is Jasmine. I am the co-coordinator for the Electoral Field Committee. I have been canvassing for about 8 years. I think it's one of the most important, or even the most important thing that anyone can do to make real social, economic, and racial change in the United States and locally. And I just love canvassing, and I love training people to canvass. And I think that canvassing for elections and for issues is really a phenomenal use of time.
My name is Sam. I started canvassing really when I joined DSA 2 years ago. I had canvassed for Democrats in college before, and I hated it. And the DSA approach to canvassing and the way volunteers are treated is much more respectful and much more cognizant of movement building. And it's been a really inspiring way to connect with both my comrades in DSA and my neighbors in New York City.
One thing that we're working on in between electoral campaigns is a really awesome housing campaign. Right now, we have rent stabilization laws that keep certain apartments rent stabilized, meaning that people can not be kicked out of their apartments and their rent can only go up a certain amount each year. Right now, in 2019, these rent laws are actually up to expire. And they need to be renewed. So the Electoral Committee and the Housing Committee, we're working to make sure that these laws are not only renewed, but stronger than they have been before. Our goal is eventually to have universal rent control so that every New Yorker can have an affordable place to live. Knocking on doors for universal housing is incredibly important because we do have an urgency. We do have a deadline. We need to make sure that these laws are kept reinforced and made stronger this year. But it also really sets up a environment where we're knocking on people's doors. We're talking to them about issues that are really important to them. And we're not just asking them to vote for a candidate. And I think doing canvassing to vote for a candidate is incredibly important, but it's just so much more effective when people in the community know who we are and know that we're doing a lot more than just electing someone to office. The best thing to do to get involved is to come to one of the housing canvases. We have these canvases in different parts of Brooklyn. They are Tuesdays for Tenant Tuesdays. Right now, they're biweekly, so we're doing one this coming Tuesday, which is January 29th. The one after that will be February 12th, and soon we're going to start doing it on a weekly basis. And one thing that's really cool about this campaign campaign is we're collecting information from people who think that housing is really important, and we're actually following up with them the next day. We're sending them an email, we're giving them a call, so that we're really, really organizing the community in general.
And we're back. Revolutions Per Minute Radio on WBAI 99.5 with your co-hosts today, Johnny Sagan, a.k.a. Snowy Wilderness, and Lee Zishi. And our guest is Renee Paradis from Brooklyn and National DSA Electoral Circles. And we just heard from Jasmine and Sam of the BK of the Brooklyn Electoral Field Committee about the Universal Rent Control campaign. Renee, just to be clear for those who are listening who are probably excited to hear that DSA is working to try to inaugurate universal rent control, what would be the strategy going forward once the base for this issue has been so well organized by our dedicated field canvassers to actually ensure that the rent laws are changed in June in favor of New York City renters?
So, you know, I think the traditional ways of pressuring legislators are going to come into play there, where, you know, you have just letting the legislators know that people in their district are activated about the issue, whether it's, actions at people's district offices or, communicating with the legislators via phone or email or lobbying days or, you know, all the traditional ways of letting people know that they're being watched by their constituents very eagerly on this issue, and not just their constituents, but by DSA.
And to be clear, our constituent adversaries in this fight are the real estate and rentier lobbies, are they not?
I wouldn't call them constituents.
Right. I mean, it's basically people versus money. So how do people prevail over money?
I mean, they have the plant, but we have the power.
Yes.
I think that, money helps politicians win elections, but it's no substitute for an organized, activated base. And so our challenge is always to activate and organize our communities to oppose money. And I think it's winnable. I think the two victories that NYC DSA had last year show that you can beat all the money in the world if you have enough people.
Just wanted to quickly interject for our listeners. The WBAI listener call-in line is 212-209-2877. So if you would like to discuss universal rent control and other electoral issues we're discussing today, please do. I wanted to talk about personal experience with canvassing, both yours and our co-host Lee Zishi. What would you guys tell people who are considering joining a canvass about what it feels like to go out and canvass for these issues that can seem lofty but also have such nitty-gritty importance to our lives?
Yeah, it terrifies me, and I've done it so much. I was a field organizer on the Obama campaign, and, this was in very rural, conservative, western Pennsylvania, and every single time I was so nervous to knock on that door, and almost every time I actually had a conversation with somebody, it was a really great experience. But kind of what Renee said with these campaigns, I thought that this was grassroots organizing, and it was actually Zephyr Teachout that kind of pointed out to me that the Obama campaign wasn't grassroots organizing, that there wasn't decision-making being done by the people. And then what you saw in that platform is, after the campaign, OFA was giving out unicorn statues to climate deniers. So there wasn't actual policy follow through. So I think that's very exciting that we're seeing candidates elected at DSA that then are accountable to the people and continuing that grassroots theme going through.
And I wanted to ask either of you if we've heard specifically from Julia Salazar's office in recent weeks about the status of her pursuit of better rent laws in June. Do either of you have an update on that?
At our last Brooklyn electoral meeting, we heard from her chief of staff, who came in and gave a summary of the bills that they're interested in supporting and working on. And they're continue to be strong supporters of universal rent control and of a lot of the progressive housing legislation that's surrounding that issue.
Absolutely. And I know that there are several other issue-based canvassing campaigns that DSA has engaged in recent years, and I was wondering if we could potentially list some of them for our listeners and kind of show how they correspond to the structure of working groups that we have in NYC DSA, just so people could get a sense of issues they could get involved with. I mean, I know that the New York Health Act is one big issue that we've canvassed a lot for, as is universal rent control. And there are other issues like prison abolition and immigrant justice that we have canvassed for and will be canvassing for in the future. So just as a really, I wanted to mention some of the other issues as opposed to candidates that we've been canvassing for and will be canvassing for those who would potentially be more comfortable getting involved in organizing for issues over candidates.
Yeah, and in the future, I know the Eco-Socialist Group plans on canvassing about the Con Ed rate case coming up and utility shutoff. So this very real thing, everybody pays a utility bill every month, and talking about how we don't want that money to be going to more and more fossil fuel. So it's this very real thing of people getting their bill shut off that you can talk about on their door and not just a candidate.
Absolutely. And I think now is the time in the show to discuss the fact that even though 2019 may seem to be an off year in many people's estimation of the electoral calendar, here in New York City, we actually have several high-profile and very important electoral races coming up for us to be concerned with. There's a public advocates race that it's difficult to know how well it can really be applied to the movement building and to the issues that DSA is pursuing. And there's a race for Queens District Attorney. So, Renee, what would you say is the relevance of the few offices that are coming up in New York in 2019 for the building of DSA as a movement?
Well, we had a forum for the public advocate candidates earlier this year and decided not to endorse anyone. And I doubt that will change for the November election, but it might. What was notable about that was that we got, about 10 candidates who came in to actually seek DSA's endorsement. So it was definitely seen as something valuable that people wanted. So that was pretty gratifying. And then we're about to hear, I think, two audio segments on the DA race in Queens, where the Queens Electoral Working Group has been putting together some work on that race.
That's right. For our next segment, we zoom in on an important race for local office, the Queens District Attorney position, which is up for grabs in 2019. As you may know, district attorneys wield incredible power in the administration of justice in this city, quote unquote, over justice, and their politics can have an outsized effect on citizens who find themselves in court. We spoke to Zohran of the Queens Electoral Working Group at the District Attorney Candidates Forum they held 2 weeks ago.
My name is Zohran. I think now it's becoming clearer and clearer to candidates across the city, but especially in Queens, that DSA can have a critical impact in someone's electability and someone's viability. And so people who previously thought that they might not be able to run a winning campaign all of a sudden become viable. Prison abolition is the goal. Abolitionism is the goal. At the same time, I think that belief, for me at least personally, comes out of a belief in harm reduction. So one way of getting towards prison abolition, like Larry Krasner's office has shown in Philadelphia, is by pursuing the idea of a progressive DA as much as that can actually exist. So in this case, you know, if you have a DA that comes in and refuses to prosecute multiple, you know, different quote-unquote crimes across the spectrum, it'll mean less harm for people across this borough of Queens. We only have to look at Richard Brown's horrific record to understand just how much power prosecutors have over our lives.
Super interesting. And now here's Tiffany Caban, who was recommended for endorsement by the Queens Electoral Working Group and whose endorsement the Queens branch of NYC DSA is voting on tonight.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Caban. I am a 7-year career public defender, and I am running for Queens County District Attorney. This is a moment in time where what I think is incredible about what's happening is we can have these great conversations about how a lot of the things that our communities have been fighting for are socialist ideals. They are, in so many ways, one in the same. So that has been very, very cool. One of the things that I bring to the work and why I do the work is because it feels so important to be that person in the room helping somebody or amplify their voice or tell their story or give context to it, because there's so many times that I'm talking to a DA and they're saying, well, they should have known better. And I will turn to them and say, I need you to know something. Right? Put yourself in this person's shoes, because I'm going to be honest with you. In terms of what my experience has been, is that there are plenty of situations where you could have told me a couple of years ago, you should know better, you should be able to do this thing, and I would not have been capable because it wasn't modeled for me. And I have had the privilege and the opportunity to access spaces like therapy or support systems that have helped me grow. But it couldn't have been expected of me at certain points in my life. And that doesn't make me a bad person. That doesn't make me somebody that should be punished by the system. That shouldn't be something that keeps me from growing and thriving. And so really for me, that's why I do the work. Crazy, crazy story. I had a colleague, and there are so many stories, but I had a colleague who had a client whose bail was set. They went to trial on the case, so the client was in the whole time, and they found out just before the trial that a court had adjudicated, a jury had found that this officer was guilty of, while he was off duty, pulling his service revolver out on his intimate partner. And this is a person who the DA's office was putting on the stand to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt that somebody else committed this act, when, in my opinion, that person shouldn't have had a job. One candidate saying ending cash bail actually could increase our incarcerated population, because you can't really talk about ending cash bail without talking about discovery reform and transparency with cop records, and all of those things have to come into play together to have the intended effect of what people think about when you talk about ending cash bail. So when we talk about ending cash bail, we want to release on their own recognizance, right? Release without any conditions in every possible scenario that we can, and then go above and beyond and say, well, what else can we do to support folks to get back to court? There are a whole bunch of alternatives to bail, so partially secured bonds, unsecured bonds, really making sure that we're cutting the private bail bond industry out of the system and getting rid of that middleman, because it really has historically been an incredibly predatory practice and field. So that's certainly another approach. And making sure that when we are making these assessments, we're being very careful about the programs and the algorithms we're using, because there's a lot of danger in that too, right? What we're seeing is these risk algorithms that are just playing off of the same racist and classist ideas that we've been using in a lot of other areas. And they're really imperfect at this point, so also, our office would be very, very critical of using those things and really engaging in with our communities and with families and saying, okay, hey, what is it going to take to get folks back to court? If that's what's going to take, that's what we're going to work with. So, for example, Richard Brown historically has said, hey, we're not considering immigration consequences when we do our prosecuting. We should not just be considering it, but it should be driving the decisions that get made in the office. We should be making sure that we are keeping families together, that we are protecting them from ICE. And so one of the simple things that we could be doing on the ground is sending a message by saying, we are going to make it so that you don't fear getting picked up by ICE when you do have a contact. We want to divert you away from the criminal justice system wherever possible. But if you are in the system, there are things that can be done, like working with defense attorneys and saying, hey, we're gonna make the recommendation or ask the judge that your client be excused from court. Systemically, across the board, we see the problems in all five of our boroughs. But there are some problems, particularly in the Queen's office, that there are no words. I mean, the failure to protect our immigrant communities in the most diverse place in the country is just not just mind-boggling to me, but heartbreaking. To be in 2019 and still functioning under this law and order, tough on crimes, broken windows policing, it makes absolutely no sense. Even if you're not coming from a place of, I know this to be wrong, it feels wrong, we need to be supporting our communities. Everywhere you look, the research, the data supports it. This stuff does not work.
Wow, that was great to hear. I think a lot of people will be excited to hear that there is a DSA member, potentially progressive candidate in the running for this office. Renee, what do you expect to hear from the Queen's branch in arguing yes or no for this endorsement, and what are the next steps for the endorsement process?
So the next steps for the endorsement process I'll take first, which is that so the branch would have to vote, 60% of the members who are present tonight would have to vote in favor of an endorsement. And then it goes to the citywide leadership committee, which is about 30 people made up of elected delegates from the various branches, plus our steering committee. And they're meeting early in February, and they have to vote by 60% as well, I believe. So that'll happen in early February. My guess is to arguments, I think this would be the first time that New York City DSA has endorsed a district attorney. And I think there are, fair number of people in DSA who have some concerns about that, which would basically be that the primary role of the district attorney is to prosecute and then incarcerate people for crimes. And obviously, Tiffany's coming from a position of having been a public defender in the past and a sort of radical abolitionist perspective. But at the end of the day, that's sort of the primary focus of the office. As socialists, we face a lot of things every day that we do that make us complicit in systems that we find to be unjust. And, when we endorse politicians, they go into government and are, again, in charge of unjust things. A state legislator is a part of the government that is, empowering the prosecution of people, writing laws that impose criminal penalties, et cetera, et cetera. If we endorse a presidential candidate, they're in charge of the military, right? So the question is, given that DA sort of exclusively incarcerates people and DSA is an explicitly prison abolitionist organization, is it our role to be doing that?
I wanted to ask a question about that just to be clear. Is it possible and permissible within the strictures of the office of district attorney for a candidate to run on a platform of something like prison abolition, or are they somehow ethically obligated to retain that persecutorial, prosecutorial perspective?
So ethically, the first job of the prosecutor is supposed to be to seek justice. I do a lot of appellate criminal defense in my day job, and I find that line almost to be a laugh line, given how little justice is done in the courts. So I don't think that there's a legal ethical bar to coming in with that kind of perspective. But I don't think even, the most leftward district attorney is going to be able to practice abolitionism in the systems that exist today. They'll be able to get us closer, but at the end of the day, the system they're in charge of is one that, they can't make New York prisons different. And what do they do if, there's a murderer or a rapist? It's a real question.
And just to be clear, tactically, I suppose, the next milestone in pursuing this nomination for Tiffany would be to win a primary that has now been pushed up to June. Is that correct?
Yes. All New York State primaries are now happening in June. So getting her on the ballot and then winning the Democratic primary. The incumbent isn't running, so it's a wide open seat. So there have been a lot of folks who've expressed interest.
Excellent. So at this time, we're going to open up the phone lines for call-ins from listeners. Our number at WBAI is 212-209-2877. And this is your chance to speak with Renee about what we've been speaking about today. Our question for you today is, canvassers out there, tell us your experience working on political campaigns, as well as what would you like to see NYC DSA Electoral working on next? And this is also our chance to hear from Renee about what she would like to discuss that hasn't already been discussed. So the lines are open to speak with Renee Paradis of NYC DSA. What have we not discussed thus far that you would like to bring up on this episode, Renee?
So, you know, I think one of the things that we've sort of talked about a little bit but haven't gone deep on is why field is so important. And it is because it's the one thing you can do without a lot of money that can always win an election. But it's hard to do. It takes sustained work. And that's why a lot of groups don't tend to do it.
Excellent. We actually do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air on WBAI.
Hi, good evening. I did canvassing many, many years ago for NYPERG and for St. Fries. This is, you know, in the early 80s, and yes. It was extremely difficult.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's extraordinarily hard work, but I think it's the only way to effectively organize our communities. And so, you know, for me, I don't like doing it. And I started doing it only because it's so important to DSA and DSA's model. But, you know, it's something where if you start early enough and, you know, go hard enough, you can win elections, you can win a community over, you can organize a community in a way that allows you to win elections.
So that's just my own experience with canvassing. It was extremely difficult. You know, the easy part was getting signatures, but, you know, asking for money, that was extremely difficult.
So to be clear, DSA doesn't ask money when we go door-to-door. When we go door-to-door, we're asking people to commit to vote for a particular candidate or to commit to support a particular issue. You know, in terms of raising money, we haven't really talked about that, and it is a hard thing. We don't need all the money in the world, but we do need enough to do things like print literature and hire campaign staff and rent an office and do the basics that are needed to support a field program. One of the things that we struggle with in DSA is how to raise money from DSA members, or how to balance not wanting to say to people the most important thing you can do is write a check, which is traditionally the way that people, that campaigns have interacted with their key supporters, right? How to raise enough money through the kinds of small dollar donations that have, you know, empowered Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders and Julia Salazar without without in any way undercutting our message to our members, the most important thing they can do to support a candidate is to get out and go door to door in their communities.
Absolutely. You just mentioned the B word, Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And with the time that we have left, I think that people listening to this show would be very interested to hear about another electoral project that has been working its way through the DSA's democratic process, having to do with Bernie preparedness.
So I don't think it's any secret that Bernie Sanders is considering running for president. And I think everyone in DSA has known that there would be this question of whether and how DSA would endorse Bernie, you know, in for the 2020 primary. You know, so much of our growth is ascribable directly or indirectly to the Sanders campaign. And so what we've been working on, you know, when I talked about field, I talked about the importance of starting really early, that, you know, if you're in the field 6 months before an election, you have a real chance to talk to enough people to go door to door to really, get people engaged, get people activated, get people organized to win an election. And so it's been really important for DSA. I think it's really important for us to be prepared for when and if Bernie runs for president. And so in New York, I and a bunch of other folks, mainly from the electoral working groups, have drafted a proposal for our citywide leadership committee that basically would say if National endorses Bernie Sanders, that working on his campaign would be a citywide priority for NYC DSA, and sets out the field plan basically for the kind of work we would do and how we would do it. The new challenge for us would be that it would be a true citywide campaign. So we'd have to enhance the way that our working groups, electoral working groups, work together citywide. But we see it as an enormous opportunity, not just to get out there and help get Bernie elected, or even primarily for that reason, but just as much as a way to build DSA, both our systems and our processes and our expertise, but also to bring new people in to DSA who share a democratic socialist vision for America.
Yeah, I think that actually just talking to your neighbor is a key part of kind of destroying capitalism, especially if you live in the suburbs. You know, people can drive to work, live in a bubble, they're on their phones, and never talk to their neighbor. And I think that really promotes capitalism. So that actual kind of revolutionary act right now, some people never talk to their neighbors. So just getting on that door and getting to know your community is a very crucial part of actually building a democratic socialist society.
Totally.
Totally. So on that note, as we come to the top of the hour and to the end of episode 4 of Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI 99.5 FM, let's just go over once again the ways that people can connect up with the DSA field operations of their choice and with their local branches. We have some contact information and some meetings scheduled for the coming weeks.
So the best way to get involved with the Brooklyn Electoral Working Group is to shoot us an email, and we'll put you on all relevant lists, and that's bk.electoral@socialist.nyc. If you're interested in getting involved with Queens, it's queens.electoral@socialist.nyc. And our next general Brooklyn Electoral Working Group meeting is going to be on February 7th at 7 at Repair the World NYC. But if you email us, we'll give you further details on that.
And just wanted to mention that it's nice to know that even as we speak, there are two great acts of DSA democracy with regard to electoral pursuits that are happening tonight. Tonight, the BK Field Group is actually canvassing for universal rent control in Crown Heights, and the Queens Electoral Working Group is meeting to deliberate about endorsing Tiffany. And I also wanted to remind people to follow us on Twitter at
NYCRPM.
Thank you very, very much. And thanks to our wonderful engineer, Acid Reg, at WBAI. And we will speak to you soon.